When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Mysterious Universe, Season 30, Episode 4. Coming up on the show, we've got the return of the sources, the eerie night at the French Chateau, and nocturnal visits from Mr. Olympus. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Oh, you've got some humanoid reports coming up, do you?
No, not humanoid, just general, like, hot, blonde, muscly men.
Is this the, what was it, the Fresedo stuff? Is it a follow-on from that?
Yeah, this family friend of his. This is a very well-known Spanish researcher. He passed away in 2019, I believe. Mm-hmm. But he was in his 90s, and on the last show, I referred to him as the Spanish John Keel.
Which he is.
He's just done so much research over the years, and there's this really incredible case where it's a family friend of his, and he hadn't seen this kid since he was a toddler. And Fresedo was on Spanish radio talking about parapsychology, and this old childhood friend, who is now in university, heard him on the radio talking about parapsychology issues and immediately thought, I need to reach out to Uncle Fresedo.
I love it when that happens.
Because he had started hearing voices.
Right.
And he had no one to confide in. He had no idea who to talk to. He knew he wasn't crazy, but these voices were telling him to go outside and look in the sky. And he would do this. He would listen to them. He would go outside and there'd be some strange light in the sky. And this started to escalate to the point where eventually very large, muscly men were appearing in his bedroom at night.
Are you sure it's not just some, I don't know, like hidden homosexual fantasy? Is
well, I'll probably, going on? I'll probably be playing the chapter one sound effect
good,
on this
great.
Show. That's but it's fantastic. A fun story. And I've got more stuff coming up. There's a brand new book from Preston Dennett as well.
Oh, excellent.
And the story I found from Dennett is similar. This one's from Peru. But it's, again, a young man who starts seeing these almost Vitruvian man-esque characters. You know, the...
Like the Da Vinci stuff.
The Da Vinci sketch.
Yeah.
But hovering in the air above his home.
Where was I reading about that today? I was reading something along those lines. It may have been from Preston Dennett's website. I can't recall. Because what I've got coming up on this show is along those lines. It's a little bit similar. I've been looking into some of the old reports from Flying Saucer Review, because this is part of, you know, the headlines of the show is that the sources are back. It's really strange. Like, you and I have been talking over the years, Ben, saying it seems like the phenomenon's dying down, that, you know, people aren't seeing as many UFOs, more people have, you know, phone cameras now, so why aren't we capturing more images? Well, it seems like there is this epidemic of under-reporting. There's a whole, in this modern world, yeah, it's funny because as much as we've moved forward with the belief in, you know, potential UFOs and it not just being people wearing tinfoil hats and, you know, drunks or crazy people, there's still this stigma there. There's still this ridicule. And it appears that there is a significant amount of people that see things. They experience things. They have, you know, strange lights hovering over their homes, invading their homes. They don't report it, because they're still too terrified to come out and talk about it.
Yeah, there's still stigma, obviously.
Yeah, a significant amount. This is the thing. It's almost like society is more than happy to accept the possibility that, yes, there's aliens, but it's only if the military's interacting with them or someone else is dealing with it. It's the whole, it's like a weird version of the bystander effect. It's like no one wants to do anything about it. Yeah, but they want other people to do something about it.
Yeah, give me the answers. Tell me what to think. What's the narrative?
Yep.
Please explain it to me. But you're just never going to get that.
No, I don't think we're going to get that. I don't think anyone's going
to
get that.
You have to listen to this show and hear about
for a decade.
Blonde, muscly men appearing in your bedroom at night to really understand what's going on.
And getting yub-nubbed at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Getting yub-nubbed.
Now, if you're not a Plus subscriber, you won't know what that is, and that's probably a good thing, to tell you the truth. But no, I was actually reading today about the idea of orb. So I did come across, and I didn't even bother going into it because I was looking into a documentary called, I think it's Multidimensional or something like that. I'll find it and put it in the show notes. But it's got Peter Maxwell Slattery, who is a bit of a character.
Peter!
He's a bit of a character amongst the UFO community here in Australia, in Sydney. You know, he's always...
What do you mean, a bit of a character?
Yeah,
Aaron?
Well, I call him the yeah, nah UFO guy because that's pretty much, say, if you see a UFO, he's like, yeah, nah. It's pretty typically Australian.
What's his contact? He's got some... alien that he claims he's in contact with. It's like Shani or something.
It's such a bogan name as well. It really is something like that. But funnily enough, something he was describing did coincide with an old report that I was reading from Flying Saucer Review, which I kind of found this stuff through Preston Dennett's website. And I went through and I had a look in the archives and I found all these old copies of Flying Saucer Review, which is like, it's incredible. Even after all these years, I mean, these magazines are 30, 40, in some cases, 50 years old, and they still have these cases which are just outstanding. And I wonder if people were more ready to come forward with even those outrageous reports in the past because the ridicule was kind of centralized to your own community. It seems like
now, with the spread
of the internet and everything else, you're getting ridiculed by randoms all over the world.
Yeah, worldwide, yeah.
Worldwide, exactly.
And more of our lives are online and our reputations are online as well.
It's easier to find people now. It's easier to, you know, hunt people down and give them a hard time. You know, I think that all plays into this role of what's going on. And you've got these whistleblowers, but I've said it recently, you know, these whistleblowers are coming out with this information, but it's stuff we've already all known for a very long time.
Yeah, of course.
We've all known it. And in fact, though, talking about that, I will mention, so with Slattery,
we should mention also that we're actually filming this episode.
We are filming this episode. And it's not ever going to go to air.
It won't be released, but we're kind of excited because we've got all these lights and cameras set up and we actually are doing video. It is going to happen. We're in the testing stage now. So finally the studio is set up. Gear has been acquired.
It's been such a delay. I don't know if it's supply chain issues or what it's been, but getting hold of stuff, including cables.
Mostly the delay is getting you to get off your ass and want to do it.
Okay, part of that's true. Yeah, just, a very small
like,
part
Aaron,
of
when
true.
Are we going to do this video thing? Oh, you know.
I'm busy.
I've got to unpack my boxes in my office.
That's not true.
6 months ago, we moved here.
I like how my office
I'm going to keep
is.
Making I, fun of I, you for it no, until you unpack your boxes. Did you unpack your boxes?
No, I haven't.
Week?
I haven't unpacked my boxes. I don't want to unpack my boxes. I like the creativity that I have by the chaos that surrounds me.
Oh, we are filming, but we're going to test run for maybe about a month, and there's changes we have to make to the website as well to get the video rolling. But hopefully by a month or two, our shows will be in video. And of course, that means Plus episodes as well. The Plus extensions will be still exclusive to Plus. You'll just have the option to watch the video on the website, and we'll be on YouTube and Rumble as well. If everything goes well, but
that's why I don't talk about it before it happens, because sometimes things take a long time to actually get up and running.
Well, this is why we're testing, because we need to make sure that things don't crash midway through.
Yeah.
Because if things crash with audio, we can just go, okay, we start and stop and then...
Well, we can edit.
We keep going. But if we lose the video, then what do we do?
Yeah.
So we're just going to keep testing. So if we make references to stuff we're looking at, that's why.
But it's good though, because now we actually can do that. Like we can show, you know, images of what we're talking about, and it's just going to change the dynamic of the show a little bit, but it's for the good. Like we've been doing this for so long. Like it's been 15 years or something now. We needed to change it up, and this is how we're going to do it.
So coming soon.
Yeah, coming soon. We'll see how it...
Six weeks maybe. We'll see how we go. Maybe a bit sooner.
You might get
than
a
that.
Surprise. Yeah, we'll just see how
we're
it goes.
We're still waiting for our sign because we've just got this bare wall.
Which is
us.
Actually 6 weeks away now you say it.
So, is it really?
Yeah, it is 6 weeks away.
Can we just draw one with a permanent marker?
No. We'll just use like a whiteboard marker and just, you know, we'll just rub it off as soon as the new sign comes.
Can we just get a blow up doll and get them to put an MU t-shirt on her?
See, this is the thing as well. The great part about doing video is that there's also an op shop down the road. So all the costumes we're going to be able to wear, the characters
we're not doing that.
I'm going to introduce, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You just start smirking live on camera. It's going to be great. We'll see how it goes. And I get my own soundboard. That's the best part.
Who's the first to wear a dress on the show? That's the competition.
I'm laughing because I was already planning on surprising you. I was going to just wait until we're filming the first show, just stand up and be like, check out my dress.
I know how you think. It's already like,
this is
as
the
soon
problem.
As we mentioned video, he's picking out frocks. at the local op shop. I'm like, yes, this one looks suitable.
What is it about Australians and British men about like that kind of humour? That's
it's
what it
funny.
Is. It really is. It's Dame Edna humour.
It'll always be funny.
Okay, well, look, anyway, going back to the whole Slattery thing, like I'm not bad-mouthing the guy. I just think that he's, you know, potentially has surrounded himself with, he's maybe had some genuine experiences and he's perhaps surrounded himself with people that there is a bit of a, I don't know, a belief, like a let's jump on the bandwagon. And of course, that seemingly is directed by certain people in the field. And part of this documentary is he's like, oh, like everything kind of changed for me, and I'm paraphrasing, when I met Mary Rodwell.
But, yeah, like, oh. And that's what we've long pointed out on the show is that these eyewitnesses,
yeah,
they have their stories, and then Mary Rodwell arrives on the scene and everything lines up.
Yep.
Like they're all and talking the same narrative.
They're all with humanoids, or they're all, you know, connecting with these entities and this kind of stuff.
And I like Mary. I like Mary Rodwell.
I think she's a really lovely person.
She's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And she was a guest on the show years ago. And I thought, yeah, she was a really genuine, I think she actually believes what she's discovering. But I don't know. There's just something about the content of these entities that are directing the future of humankind to kind of genetically engineer us and save us.
Yeah, there's a lot
it
of
just smells
a lot of saving
off.
Us. Yeah, it's a lot. But you know what, though? It's consistent with the contactee phenomenon. Like nothing really has changed. It's like you're destroying yourself and we're worried about nuclear weapons. And so, you know, we're going to come in and save you. That's kind of coming through now with other people in the field. But what he did say, and this is where you have to draw, you know, that line between, well, is the guy just, you know, a little bit, you know, caught up in the vibe of what's going on, or is he actually having genuine experiences? And he describes that for some of the phenomenon when it started for him, there was orbs that were floating around his house. Mm. Like these orbs would just float around his house. He described it as being like he'd see a flash, but it wasn't like out of the corner of his eye. It was quite an obvious flash that would occur. And he said he realized that these orbs of light would start turning into what were like balls of lightning that were moving about. So they were obviously, you know, becoming shaped, shifting and changing. And then ultimately they became humanoid forms, which he described as being like liquid electricity or something like that. So very unusual reports. I'm like,
they were like liquid electricity.
Yeah, it was like that. It was like that. But then it just so happens that if you go through these really old reports from Flying Saucer Review, there's some ideas in there about the orbs being projectors of these forms, right? So people have had encounters, you know, over the years, through the decades, where they've encountered flying orbs that are associated with UFOs. They've come down from the sky, are extremely bright, almost blinding in some circumstances. And from it, they project some type of form. And the idea is that these balls themselves are like some type of weird holographic projector for whatever these things are. And that's exactly what Slattery was describing.
Yeah, right. Well, the problem with any kind of discussion on balls of light is because of today's thinking, people immediately associate it with UFOs. It's always some kind of craft or aliens. But traditionally, balls of light.
Think spook
of
lights.
Will-o'-the-wisp and spook lights.
Yep.
It's always involved
spiritual.
With a spirit or a witch or a shaman. It's a spiritual entity. It's not necessarily a craft. This is where people
not.
Seem to think. I was watching a video today of a guy that was visiting family in Mexico, and he said he was out one night after watching a movie or something, and he and his friends just saw these lights in the sky, little balls of light zipping around, you know, sharp movements.
Well, like ping pong ball kind of lights, or
no, like a basketball size.
Yeah,
he's seeing them at a distance, and he's immediately thinking, "We saw UFOs. We saw UFOs." So the next day, he speaks to the locals in the area they were in, and the locals say, "What are you talking about? That's the witches. They always come out.
Yeah,
gets to about 11 p.m. and these balls of light come out. It's the witches," and that's more akin to the traditional understanding of what these things were. They're not necessarily craft or aliens. It's like
it's definitely something that's non-human, but it's not necessarily extraterrestrial. And each culture kind of in the past has, you know, perceived it usually as being something that is supernatural as opposed to extraterrestrial. But that's where we're at in today's society. And, you know, the one thing that we've recently been discussing is I've been trying to point out that once we get ourselves past
the nuts and bolts concept of the extraterrestrial phenomenon, because there absolutely is a nuts and bolts aspect to it. We have to start getting people adjusted to the consciousness attributes, the supernatural high strangeness attributes of it. And if you're listening to the show, watching the show soon, you would kind of already be there, I think. But for a lot of people, you know, any of the normies that are just listening to, you know, these whistleblowers, that's just so far from their mind. Like, so far from their mind that to even start suggesting that there's a consciousness aspect to it, that there's a hallucination aspect to it, or, you know, an actual spiritual aspect to it, is just, I think, too much for a lot of people to handle. However, in saying that, on this show, we are very much returning to the physicality of sources, because this is where I ultimately came back to today, is that apparently in the last 10 years in Queensland, we have had an explosion of sightings.
Are you going to talk about the local one that just happened?
That's what I'm going to go into. So talking about, you know, being able to hunt people down and get in contact with them, that was very difficult today as I tried to get in contact with Joy Paul. So Joy Paul is a resident of a local suburb here, not too far from you and I, Ben. She lives in the Glasshouse Mountains in a suburb called Birrabarram. And she claims that in the early hours of last Monday, or maybe the Monday before, it was July the 24th, she said she had this encounter that left her shaking like a leaf, and she's completely at a loss to explain the phenomenon. And as soon as I started reading this, I'm like, this is like quite a stunning encounter, because it's not just that she simply saw a star in the night sky. For whatever reason, she was up at 2 o'clock, which can happen, right? People obviously wake up, but I've noticed with a lot of this phenomena, people can't sleep and they happen to just be in a position to see something. That seems to be a recurrent kind of thing that occurs. So she's awake.
She's an old bird.
She's an old bird. She's up, you know, she's looking outside. And she says outside, she sees that there's some type of light. She thought that maybe it was a street light, but this thing starts descending down and closer and has this beautiful pink glow around it. It's a cylinder. It's like, it's this large, like, I think she said it was a 1.5 meter in height cylinder, 80 centimeters wide. So what's that? You know, that's a couple of feet. She said it arrived and then it tilted about 45 degrees. And then there was an opening in the roof that started scraping along the ground. It's like this flying tin can with an open lid and it's scraping along the ground. But at the same time, she's like, it's so pretty. It's got this weird glow.
This is such a weird case because immediately you think, oh, something's fallen off an airplane, or, you know, this is some kind of scrap that's flung off a truck or something. But
it
the fact
glow.
That she's saying that it's glowing pink and she's got this weird feeling while watching it, this is super strange. This is high strangeness all over.
The other thing is that this cylinder, right, not only if it was something that had fallen off the back of a truck or an aircraft or something, we have plenty of military helicopters that fly over this region, that all could be a possibility. She said it closed and then shot vertically into the sky at an extremely fast speed. So that's not junk. That's something else. And she said, look, this experience lasted no more than 2 minutes. And what was odd, though, is that when she didn't notice at first, I believe, but when this thing took off, the streetlight came back on. So it had some type of interference, electrical interference effect on the streetlight that was, you know, out the front of her house. So she's at a loss to describe what this is, and she was left shaken by it. Now, this was published in the Glasshouse Country and Mulaney News. I emailed them today.
How did you find this?
So I found it through just through the news feeds, right?
Yeah, right.
This obscure kind of thing that popped up. I tried emailing them, and let me just have a look here, because they haven't, just before we recorded, they hadn't gotten back to me. But I found her phone number. So I tried calling them, and of course, no one answered the phone. So I'll see if I can get in contact with her, because what I would really like to know, obviously, if she wants to talk to us.
You've got to go down to the local bowls club. She's there from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m.
Well, like, I want to know, you know, if she's had, because obviously someone reporting from, you know, this local small newspaper rag probably isn't going to ask questions like, well, did you have any experiences of high strangeness? Well, so you feel like anything else is in the home now?
They didn't ask her any questions.
They didn't.
It's just what she saw and that's it.
But this is really exciting to me because, I mean, this is just down the road. This is happening, you know, only a couple of weeks ago. There's something very, very strange going on in this area. And it just so happens that this whole area of Queensland has seen an explosion in phenomenon over the last 10 years.
Yeah, you've been seeing weird stuff around your house.
That's
strange
right.
Strange lights at night. There's been reports of UFOs last year up and down the coast. And now this lady's seen some kind of pink glowing probe in her backyard.
If you recall back in April, I think, April or May, you had, I think it was the Good family, don't quote me on that, but their ranches, they're up in Mackay. they had 20 cattle that were mutilated. So you've got cattle mutilations that are occurring. You've got, you know, this lovely old duck, you know, seeing a weird pink cylinder landing at the front of her house. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. So I went digging to see if there were more reports coming out of Queensland. And there are. You've got researchers like Cheryl Gottschall, who is, well, I believe, still currently the UFO Research Queensland Group president or leader. When I went to their website, though, unfortunately, it shut down. So I don't know if they just haven't paid for their hosting or, as you know, UFO research doesn't pay very well. But I managed to get into some of their archives from, you know, some archive sites to see what's going on. And in fact, you know, she's only recently, I found out, been speaking to other researchers about some of the experiences that she's had, you know, over the years being a field investigator in Queensland. So she was talking to Ben Hurl, and we've mentioned some of his work as well. He's down in Victoria. But she said, look, there is, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's been going on in the 1990s. A lot of weird activity was occurring in the 90s. I know that's a little bit further out than what we're talking about, but still, it's kind of around the time. And she points out that she handled this really unusual case where, while nothing was directly seen, it had some very strange elements to it. So she said she was called up in the late 1990s to a property that was to the north of Brisbane. It was on 5 acres, you know, it was in bushland. And when she doesn't say the exact suburb, but as soon as she says north of Brisbane, I'm like, are we talking Caboolture or are we talking Glasshouse Mountains? Yeah. Like, are we talking up in this area? And she said that she drove out to this property with another researcher, and the property owner and his family had said, look, you know, we've been seeing lights in the sky over a couple of nights previously. But also we noticed something very odd, that this is what prompted us to call you, is because there was lights that were in this back paddock. Like, so normally the way that these houses were built, and they still kind of are, is that you would have, the house at the front, obviously, you know, near the road, and then you'd have all the bushland behind it. And he said, look, there was lights descending into the bushland that was behind our home, which was odd. Like, it was just straight, because you know what lights are. Like, you know what a light is. You know if it's, you know, even a kite that's on fire or something. You know what things are for the most part.
Yeah, when do lights descend?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And we don't have the kind of, and we've spoken about this, we don't have those kind of fireflies that are that bright. You know, it wasn't anything like that. It was something significantly bigger. And obviously, it has a feeling attached to it as well. So when they were looking at this, they're like, why are these lights hanging around down the back there? And they didn't dare go down there during the night. And why would you? Like, I wouldn't. But they did go down the next day. And when they went down, even though it was only a singular animal, something very strange was found. They said that they came across a dead chicken that had been completely turned inside out.
What?
It was inside out. It was like,
how do you turn a chicken inside out?
Well, that's it was like the head had been cut off, and it had been gloved, like a glove turned inside out.
Oh, God.
But no blood from the sounds of it. So it's already got a cattle mutilation feel. And the skeleton was completely removed. It wasn't pulled out. It wasn't like it was torn apart. The carcass was still intact, but the skeleton was removed, just gone. And she's like, okay, well, the owner is like, I have to, you know, contact someone. And that's why they got in contact with UFO Research Queensland.
I like that we're doing video in the future, because you'll be able to see my reaction to inside out chicken.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
A gloved chicken.
I'll have to make sure I keep that in my files for you. So, this is a very strange and, you know, a highly unusual, you know, experience to take place, but it's consistent with cattle mutilations. And then, of course, skip forward, you know, roughly 30 years, you've got these cattle mutilations taking place, not only across Mackay. There's allegedly cattle mutilations that are happening out near Kenilworth and, you know, just out from us, Ben, you know, like half an hour to an hour.
They're riding out there.
Yeah, out from us. So I haven't been able to also get in contact with them either, some of those reports, but I'm trying to hunt these people down because I want to know what's going on. It seems like the activity is increasing. She describes another case as well, where this woman called her and said that, look, this actually happened many years ago. She didn't feel comfortable reporting it until recently. But she was living in the southwest of Brisbane. So we are moving a little bit further away from where we are. But she said this kind of area, which I'm assuming might be Ipswich or something like that, it has, you know, rural sections where you can have acreages. And she lived on an acreage. And to get to school, they had to go through a paddock. And this paddock, it was like, they were wandering through it. There was nothing remarkable about it by any means, like nothing at all, except one day they're walking through it and they stumble across this double ring that's in the ground. Like, it's a double, it's a huge
burnt
ring.
Into the ground?
Like, it's not fairy burnt. Ring? It's like, it's...
The grass is depressed?
It's like a depression, you're right. And it is like it's burnt, but no heat has been applied.
like, if that's the way to kind of describe it. Like, it was just odd and strange and something didn't feel right about it. And it was a double ring. And as they're looking, the reason why these poor kids were so freaked out by what they saw is that they said that there was like gizzards of small animals.
Ugh.
So like blue-tongued lizards, mice, I think there was a fox in there. But it was like it had been ground up by something, like how very it ate my horse. And it somehow had spun it in a circular kind of fashion and had strewn it out in this ring. Like, and it was on the outside of the ring. So whatever this was, like, this was clearly some type of weird cattle mutilation. Mm. But of course, they were like, didn't know what it was, they're kids. And they go home and they tell their families. But that particular night, and this is the high strangeness effect of it, this is where the consciousness stuff kind of kicks in, is that they wouldn't have thought too much about it except for the fact that they went home that evening. And the main witness here who had contacted Cheryl said that on this acreage, they had a bunch of animals. They had geese and horses and God knows what other animals, domesticated animals that they had. All of a sudden, they all just went crazy at the same time. Totally lost it, squawking, screaming, neighing, running around, completely unable to calm down. The parents went outside and tried to calm down the horses. It took them, you know, an hour or so for that to happen. And she's just like, this is surreal, like this is weird, but manages to get back to sleep. So she gets back to sleep. She goes home to school the next day.
Mm.
Her friend comes up to her and her friend is like, oh, I had a really weird night. All of our animals went crazy. And then the other kid who had been walking through the field in the paddock with them goes, oh, that's weird. I had the same encounter. All my animals went crazy last night. And of course she's like, well, that's exactly the same thing that happened to me. So three kids that, you know, live in a general kind of vicinity, but all of their animals all had the same effect afterwards. So the question is here is that, is it because they stumbled across that site that it was some type of, they'd made a connection with the high strangeness element that we don't know what that is, like the intelligence behind the phenomenon, that it had somehow followed them, it had trailed them home. And because animals seem to be more sensitive to this kind of stuff, that they were, you know, fearful and they reacted that way. Or was it something different? I mean, was there just a UFO that was buzzing around that area and was just happened to be searching those properties looking for animals? There was no other reports of mutilations. So, you know, whatever that grisly mess was, it's just odd. And this is what happens with these reports. They're just always very, very odd. But Cheryl points out that, look, if you talk to the Indigenous people from the Cape, like this is up the Cape of Queensland, so you've got, you know, inside that goes back towards the Northern Territory. There's reports there, of course, you've got Aboriginal trackers, you know, Aboriginal stockmen, that kind of stuff. And obviously their stories start getting around. You know, they normally are kept, you know, amongst themselves, but their stories do get out. And there was this one man that had been in Cairns. And so this story is like secondhand that came through to Cheryl. But he's like, oh, I just met this Aboriginal, you know, tracker. And I just happened to be talking about some of the strange phenomena that's seen out in these areas of Queensland. And it is like, it's remote, isolated, you know, just beautiful country, but things can happen out there. You know, there's, regardless of the, you know, paranormal stuff that happens, there's strange disappearances, there's murders, there's a whole heap of stuff that is just never solved.
It's the Wild East.
It really is. It's just, it's a wild, desolate countryside. But this Aboriginal man was like, yeah, look, that particular area you're talking about, never go back there. Just don't go anywhere near it. It was almost like,
why?
Yeah. He's like, oh, why? Like, is it, you know, is it because of your people? You know, is it sacred? He's like, no, there's something out there that just fucks up kangaroos.
Oh, really?
And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, they mutilate. And he starts describing something out there. They've never seen it, but they've seen lights. They remove the jaw, you know, sucks blood out of things.
Is there a traditional name for it, or is it just some modern thing that they've noticed?
No, there is. I think there was a mention of some type of, you know, of because it was like a spirit that was associated with it. But no, it was like a more modern kind of like, just don't go there because there are kangaroos that are being mutilated. So it's not just cattle, right? It's not just livestock that's being slaughtered. It's other animals. It's native Australian animals that are being affected by this as well. And apparently, Cheryl was saying there are nomadic Aboriginal groups, and because they are, you know, traditionally nomadic, that they're just like, no. You just like, there's certain areas you just don't go into because, yeah, there's a spirit there. But some of the more modern interpretations is because they're reporting cattle mutilations, or case, kangaroo mutilations. So you're really not safe anywhere you go. And we know that there are reports of human mutilations. So
maybe this is part of the reason. Like, I do not believe that the government by any means has the best of intentions for us. I just do not believe that. Otherwise, you know, the phenomenon, they would have come forward. They would have told us exactly what's going on from the get-go. Even if it's from a military standpoint, you know, why they're not telling us, you know, what's occurring. However, what might be more disturbing is that they just can't protect us from it.
Well, again, to not to beat a dead horse, but they, it's almost as if some elements of the government are trying to tell us and no one cares.
Yeah.
Because no one trusts them anymore.
No, they don't.
Which is totally understandable,
they don't.
As I've said previously. Why would you believe anything they say? It doesn't matter what the narrative is that they're going to spin around UFOs. The majority of people are going to say, nonsense, I don't believe it.
Yeah, you're totally right. Unless it's, you know, it's really thrust in their face and... I don't know. I mean, what is it with UFOs? Does a person have to be, you know, dragged through the mud, proverbially, or sometimes, you know, physically?
Sometimes,
depending on what circumstances.
A handsome, muscular blonde man needs to appear in your bedroom at night and convince you.
A rod in your ear to see what happens.
A yub nub. Just a little yub nub.
It won't hurt, little yub nub.
Chapter one.
Get go.
What?
Right.
What? That's the only thing. There's no end to that.
You cut it off.
No, that's it.
Gay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Did you actually put that delay in it? Like, these videos are going to be crazy. This one is never going to air. So then, of course, you know, we skip forward to 2010. So those reports, like this is 1980s, 1990s, these reports, but there are, you know, more modern reports that are occurring. And this one was actually reported in the UFO Encounter magazine that the Queensland UFO Association publishes, which is now offline, but I managed to find a copy from, you know, one of those archive sites. And in issue 280, there's a report from Greenbank in Queensland, which is in Brisbane, right? This happened around 1 o'clock in the morning. It was the 15th of October in 2015. Once again, a man is living on a acreage property. And during the night, like, he lets his dog out to go for a pee, and the dog runs outside about to do its normal things and comes running back in, terrified. Like, the dog, this is not a dog that gets terrified, but no. This dog was terrified. So the man's like, well, hang on, what's my dog worried about? Like, this is not normal. So he steps outside, and he says as soon as he steps outside, just about 50, 60 meters from where he's standing, there's this large, deep orange, perfect sphere, which is just hovering over his neighbor's house. It's about the size of, you know, 6 four-wheel drive vehicles. It's absolutely huge. And it has no illumination coming from it, but it is lit up itself. It's like looking at the sun with no glare, and it's just remaining there. It's just kind of hovering in the air. So, of course, he runs back inside and he tells his partner, you know, get outside. You have to come and see this. You know, yeah, nah, it's out there. And she comes running out, and as soon as they get back outside, it's gone. Like, this object has just disappeared. But it had affected the neighbor's alarm. So the neighbor's alarm had gone crazy, and it couldn't be turned off. And obviously the neighbor was woken up and had come to check out, you know, what's going on. And this guy was terrified by this. He was so terrified by this that he actually gathered up his partner and his children, and they slept in front of the fireplace together. Wow. Like, they were so freaked. And it's just like, I know it's just a sphere. Like, it's easy to talk about and be like, oh, you just saw a sphere over your neighbor's house. Like, no, it's a sphere that's the size of 5 or 6 four-wheel drives, which is, you know, terrifying your dog and terrifying your family. Yeah. Now, apparently they all went to sleep, but here's the kicker, right? They said they felt like they were being watched after this thing had disappeared. It was like something was around. There was some time. And this is why I want to get in contact with this woman from Birrabarram, because I'm like, did you feel like you were being watched? Did you feel like there was some type of after effect with this sighting? Because this is what is just so common with these things.
Well, with a lot of these stories, you have something happen on an initial night, but then there's more activity that occurs in
and
the
more
following nights.
And more, exactly.
So, yeah, you've got to get in touch with her.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like,
I told you, the Bowls Club should be there.
Well, this is the thing, though. I am out of the loop. I told you about the Rainstone. I only heard that because I was at the gym, and I'm like, I need to go and hang at the Bowls Club.
You got to go down to the
club.
That's
where it came from.
You got to go to the RSL. Or you got to go to the Bowls Club.
The RSL,
What's the Bottle-O? Murphy, what's it called?
Oh, yeah, Dan Murphy's.
You got to go Dan Murphy's.
No, that doesn't work. You got to be somewhere where people are actually drinking. Like, it can't be. But then, of course, you're going to get people spinning yarns as well. So it's difficult to work out what's going on. So, look, the thing is that the sources have returned. The activity is back, and there's these recurring themes that pops up in so many of these cases. You know, you've got reports coming out of Queensland, which I thought were really intriguing, that stem from 2015, you know, kind of have a seeming like an uptick in 2017, 2018, drop right down. Then you get into 2021 and the activity has started to start moving up again. That seems to be what the case is according to the most recent data, which is about up to, I think, 8 months old from what I was looking at. But guess what a recurring theme is in some of these cases of what I was reading? The sound of metal. Like the sound of dragging metal is a term that we've used.
So we
scraping.
You know, this keeps coming up. I mentioned this on the last Plus episode. There was a case from Salvador Fresedo, and it was in Mexico, I believe, where there was all sorts of UFO activity on a Skinwalker Ranch-esque property there. And before one of these large orbs hit the dirt in front of all these workers and the owner of the ranch, they said they heard a sound like a giant truck unloading metal pipes.
Yeah.
And they'd heard the sound like this before because the local power company had been laying these large pipes, these large conduit pipes, and they said it had the exact same sound, this rattling metal sound. We often hear this with Sasquatch encounters as well.
Say, exactly, like, that. Guess where else it's heard?
Some kind of weird metal, striking metal in the middle of the forest.
There was a Yowie report that I was reading. It was only very short, but it was down in Southport, which is down towards the Gold Coast. And, you know, I think, is it Harrison? What's his name? It's not Rex Harrison.
Dean Harrison.
Dean Harrison, yeah. So he pulls a lot of reports from that area as well. So I need to go and look into his stuff. But essentially, this witness was saying that they were driving along, right? And as they're just driving along the highway, yeah, I mean, there's a few other cars around, but it got quiet. Like all of a sudden, like the Oz factor, everything kind of got quiet as they're driving along. And they had their window down because it was a hot, you know, Queensland night. They didn't have the air conditioning going and their window was down. They weren't driving too fast. And as they're driving along, they hear this scraping sound. It sounded like chains being dragged along the ground. And I'm like, well, what are chains? Like what you were describing just before, like the spiritual aspects in the past. Chains being dragged along are traditionally associated with hauntings.
Yeah, of course.
You know, people describe haunting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't it weird,
right? I never thought of that. Yeah.
So he hears this chain being dragged along. And as he hears this chain going along, he suddenly stopped his vehicle because he thought maybe he'd run over something and it was stuck to the car or whatever it was. As soon as he steps out of the car to have a look, he hears a... like this kind of noise, what? like a growl, like a low guttural, but inquisitive is the term that was used.
Yub nub.
No, it wasn't yub nub. Well, yeah, it wasn't yub nub. Larger yub nub. No, he just looks over and there's this Sasquatch, this like literal cone head Sasquatch that's just kind of standing out from a tree. And he's obviously freaked out and he starts to scream and he runs back into his car. And the moment he runs back into his car, looks back over his shoulder, the thing's gone. And then the whole thing ended. But why? Like, it was almost like, how could it be that this thing is just standing at the precise point where he stops his vehicle and yet he hears the sound further down the road, which seems to travel with his vehicle?
Yeah, so we've often speculated the sound is from some kind of tear in time and space.
But how is it?
A dimensional rift opening up.
Yeah, but how is it that the tear is occurring at that particular moment, that it all kind of coordinates perfectly?
Because they're watching him from the other side.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? This is the idea that if it is, you know, from the other side, that you can just so easily do that. In fact, I was looking into a case today, which kind of, you know, diverges a little bit, but where is it? I'll just see if I've got it here in my notes. See, people can actually see I've got my notes now. Well, not on this
particular episode. Oh, great.
But
thrilling. People will be lining up to see your notes.
I don't care about that. No, but I've been accused of not having any notes. So I'm like, no, I do. I do have notes.
Well, sometimes you have too many notes.
That is true.
So people can complain live that you have too many notes.
I love what you said to me, though, about video. You're going to be, think about it, Aaron. Think about it. We can have access to hundreds of thousands of more people that are just going to hate us. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
That's just...
Yeah, there's like 3 billion people on YouTube that haven't seen how racist we are yet. That's a whole new audience.
It's great. It's going to be fantastic. Actually, I can't find it here. So I was listening to a report.
That's the other thing with video is we're not stopping and doing
it. I know. We're just going to keep on going.
So you just got to roll.
Oh, I've got all these cases here. Where is it? So, this is a good example. So there was a guy on YouTube and it's actually quite similar. His name's Stephen. He's from the YouTube channel, The Facts by HowToHunt.com. And I'll link to his channel in the show notes and hates the Canadian government, so I like him. And he was describing, actually, because people contact him with their experiences. And there's this one report from a guy that essentially reported something very similar. He claims that, you know, he was going along one evening and he encountered something that was like a strange noise or some type of form that happened. And he felt it was the same thing. There was this kind of grunt that happened as he looks out. And the grunt was just strange. Like, it was like a...
not comforting, but there was like a calmness.
Like a yub?
No, it wasn't like a yub nub, but it was definitely
a comforting yub nub.
It was kind of comforting. And this happened in, I think it was, here it is. It's Roan Mountain in East Tennessee. And of course, what have they seen before? A glowing ball of light.
Yeah.
So he's watching this glowing ball of light. And we know from the Stan Gordon research that Sasquatch encounters are, you know, highly correlated with balls of light sightings, particularly back in the 1970s, 1980s. But he said that as he's watching this ball of light, something appeared and kind of just touched him. And he realized, like, he turns around, and apparently he said when he turned around, his face is like, he could have motorboated this Sasquatch. It was like 6 foot pecs, he reckons, like sticking out from his chest, and like 4 foot wide chest. This thing's just like, yeah, no, but it's just standing there. He's terrified. Like, he's absolutely terrified. He said his shoulders are like two basketballs, and he's just like, he's so shocked. He doesn't know what to do. He's kind of paralyzed or frozen. And as he is, he says, in an instant, this thing just kind of steps back, like goes, steps back and is gone. But he says it's like he stepped through space-time. Like, he just stepped through, and it reminded me of the Kawani Lapsaritas stuff. Like, it's got a Kawani Lapsaritas kind of feel to it, that it's this portal kind of effect. So I thought about that, you know, in conjunction with that report from Southport. It's like, well, is this what they're doing? They just step into our dimension. Like, it's just such an easy thing for them to do.
That would explain the elusiveness.
Yeah, exactly. And why we don't have a body, and, you know, why we don't have anything else. But then, of course, you know, there's other elements of these stories, which is just, it's just odd. Like, these things are jerks sometimes. And there was a case that was translated.
Sasquatch in general.
Just Sasquatch, hairy humanoids, you know, all of these things. Like, there's like a whole heap of reports. I'll link to this one in the show notes as well. I didn't go into it in any great detail. But Preston Dennett did a collection of reports of people that have encountered UFOs that essentially have humanoids that just make fun of abductees.
Like, they awesome.
Just, yeah, there was this one case where a woman got abducted, and it was a horrifying encounter. Like, it was just absolutely, as all abductions are, but this was particularly horrifying. She's dragged aboard this craft, and she's paralyzed, and the amount of fear that's overwhelming her. And they cut a lock of her hair off. And one of these greys, after they cut the lock of the hair off, one of these greys grabs it, and he like puts it up to his head. He's like, ooh, ooh. And then like they're kind of sharing it, showing their hair, and they're laughing. Like, it was a fun game to them.
I'd like someone to pick up abduct a human and just be like,
stop being a fucking failure. Stop being a loser.
Well, that's pretty much anyone that they abduct from Reddit. So, you know, that's how that goes.
Good point.
So anyway, so as these, you know, these craft or these humanoids are doing this thing, these things to people, like, it seems like they're laughing. There's reports from France where people are like seeing a craft flying over. And this is like 1910, like a really early report. And it's not like any of the steampunk kind of stories you hear of the airships or anything like that. It's literally like a saucer flying over, but with a bunch of portholes on it and these non-human humanoids inside it. Like, they're clearly not humans, but they're humanoids. And it's almost like they're drinking tea and just laughing at the apes. They're just laughing and just mocking people as people are running in the street terrified from what this is. And these things, they just don't care. Mm. But then it becomes a little bit more visceral. And there's this report that was actually translated from Fresedo, Salvador Fresedo. It happened in 1976. This happened in Santander in Colombia. And it just so happens that there was this bus that was driving people along this rickety road. And it makes me think of those, you know, YouTube videos you see of like buses almost falling off cliffs. Like, it's just a horrible, terrible road. And it was just going so slow. It had to go so slow because of the treacherous conditions. But it wasn't raining or anything like that. So they're driving along. And the bus slows right down because these little people come running out of the forest, like all these little pygmy people. But they're not, again, they're not human. They're humanoid, but they're not.
What are
human.
They, little hairy guys?
They're like,
are
little hairy guys.
Alien greys? No, what are they?
They're like little hairy guys.
Little yubnubs.
Yeah, little yubnubs, right? And they all come running out of the forest, and they all go to the back of this bus. I'm assuming it's like a minibus kind of thing, and they grab hold of it, and they stop it. They stop it, right? Which isn't bad. So people on the bus are intrigued and obviously terrified at the same time. There's a couple of chickens flying past around there, and they go running up to the back to have a look. When these things start pushing the bus, and they're all rocking the bus, they push this bus over. Like, they push the bus over. It doesn't fall off a cliff, but they push it over. And all these people are inside trying to scramble out.
They just
out.
Roll the bus.
And it's almost like,
so it's like a teenage prank.
Yeah. And they're laughing.
So they're like little juvenile Sasquatch.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And Fresedo was reporting that these things were just laughing. They're just laughing and having a great time.
Well, it is pretty funny.
But that's the thing. I'd be laughing at those little freaks, not, you know, the fact that they just pushed my bus over.
When I was in high school, we once turned over the milk truck. it was like a little milk truck that sold chocolate milk, and we snuck in at night and just tipped it over.
What kind of a sociopath are you? How big was this milk truck?
Oh, it wasn't like, it was like a little thing as big as this table. It's just like a lady would sit in it and sell milk at lunchtime. And we were
so
like,
that poor lady the following day had to pick up that whole move bus it.
The next day they had a crane. And that made it even funnier.
This video stuff is just making us more evil than we actually are. So anyway, with these encounters, once this, what was strange as well, I mean, apart from the fact it's already strange that you've got a bunch of yub-nubs coming out and pushing your bus over, and these horrified people, but there was a sound. It was a sound that had no audio to it, though. It was weird. It was almost like, because—
What does that mean?
Because all the creatures, as I was watching, all of them suddenly, like, pricked their ears up and respond. It's like they're recalled by something, and they'll just go, yee-haw, and all go running back into the forest. It's like they were recalled by something. So I don't know if it was a parent Sasquatch, a parent entity, or whatever the hell these things are, but off it goes.
And where is this again?
This was Santander in Colombia.
Okay.
So this was a summer report, apparently. But you know what, Ben? The other thing I came up through was just, and this is so typical, though, of Australian media. There was a report from Amamore. And Amamore, this is from 2012. It's just here, Ben. It's just here. It's probably like a half an hour drive, if less than that, from here. It is kind of like a little country town. But in Amamore, back in 2012, Channel 7 News was reporting on the fact that this guy, apparently his girlfriend, had been seeing odd lights in the sky, right? And he was like, oh, come on, you know, that's ridiculous. So he put his infrared camera out, right? Mm. His infrared camera picked up this long string of all black lights in a cylinder kind of fashion that was hovering directly over the town of Amamore. Now, this is consistent with this uptick in reports of what people are experiencing. Then you've got Yungabunna, which is up in Queensland. This is roughly in the region of Cairns, so it's not too far from there. But yeah, people are just seeing lights and having these experiences. And in that Channel 7 thing, they're like, oh, well, you know, now that you've got UFOs in Amamore, what do you hope it's going to do? Like, bring a galactic... I was like, oh, come
cringe.
On. Yeah, I just full on cringe. I'm just like, I'm out. I'm just done. But with this report that came from just outside of Cairns, so let me just pull it up here in my notes. So the witness didn't report this until 2022 or 2023, because obviously, again, they were concerned about the ridicule that would come from this. But essentially what had happened, sorry, this is the problem when we're not... Yeah, I know, I knew you've got that ready to go.
I had it queued up. Oh, I could tell by the panicked look on his face.
I'm like, where is it? Where's the tab? I can't find the tab. No, I can't find the tab. That's just great.
Don't worry, this sample just keeps playing, just dude. You got plenty of time.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to take the pressure off. I'm just going to take the pressure off, and I'm just going to see what happens. I'm just like, I'm all good.
This is the new not editing show.
This is terrible. This is absolutely terrible.
I think it'll loop.
It's looping. That's good. No, I can't find the tab. Forget it. What I know, though, of the report is, which wasn't reported until 2023, 2022, is that it actually occurred back in 2015. But what was really strange about this is that the eyewitness claims is that it was a broad daylight. They were just driving along. Happens to be in a field area where there's a whole heap of sugarcane. And that region up there is, you know, has a lot of sugarcane. And that actually becomes important later on, because you seem to have this global phenomenon as well of UFOs landing in fields. Mm. And for whatever reason, who knows? Like, that, yeah, they leave crop circles, but why is it that they land? Is it like the obvious? Is it just because it's a very large open space that that's somewhere that they can land? Or is there something specific about it that they leave behind? But regardless, this guy claims that as he's driving along, he said the reason why his attention was drawn to the sky is because the entire sky pixelated. And it wasn't like he was having some type of episode or, you know, migraine or something. You know, we talk about the migraine aura. He's like, no, the entire sky just suddenly pixelated and then started moving towards itself. It was kind of amassing upon itself. And it drew itself together until it came to a ball and then outflashed a UFO and took off. So it was like, did he witness a craft somehow manifesting in our reality? Is that what occurred? Or,
you know, what is it? But it's not just simply lights in the sky that people are seeing. People are seeing, you know, a wide variety of paranormal phenomena and entities and beings.
Wasn't one of the reports from the recent hearing with the whistleblower Grush a report of a square in the sky, like a square object, a disc, not disc, but a rectangle or something?
There's a whole, you know, variety of craft that people are recording that they're seeing. You know, people are seeing...
I've got a few coming up.
Oh, excellent.
Like a giant rectangle in the sky with a nude blonde man in it.
What's with all
that? Chapter one.
Did you put that delay in? Like now, like every time.
It's because
do I have to wait for it?
It's because one half of the sample is on one page and then I got to flip to the other page to get the end of it.
Yeah, you just wait until you hear my soundboard.
You're not getting a soundboard.
It's going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen. So let's talk about, you know, some of the more unusual elements of these cases, of the actual physical trace evidence that's left behind with a lot of these things. And you know, one of these cases that really stands out actually comes from Kentucky. This is from 1981 in Casey Country, or County, I'm sorry. And it relates to Kathy Gilpin. So she and her 19-year-old son, this is Arlen, they're in their home in Chestnut Flat Ridge. This is a rural area once again. They hear this strange whirring sound outside. That sound again, like a metallic sound or some type of machinery.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't loud at first, but it got louder and louder, and they go running to the window, and when they do, they see this large glowing ball of orange light that's coming through the woods. It's moving through the woods. Now, you would think it's a car, it's a vehicle approaching, but, you know, they didn't have anyone, you know, coming to the home that they were expecting, so they're like, oh, this is kind of strange. So Arlen stays inside and tries to call his aunt and uncle, who live nearby, while, you know, his mother, Kathy, you know, runs outside to see whatever this is. And she realizes that this isn't a car. It's something else. But guess what it was doing? It was compelling her. She said, I didn't want to, but something was compelling me to go outside. I got this weird feeling that it was pulling me to it.
That's the old classic.
Isn't it? Isn't it? It's just, it's odd. And she's like, there's no way that I'm going any further. Like, there's no way. So she managed to, she climbed into the car by this point, and because it's a large property, and she managed to turn the car around and head back home. And she broke free of this weird trance. Like, she was put into a trance or this force that had descended upon her. But Arlen, you know, after calling his relatives, he'd grabbed his gun, he'd hiked at its side to investigate. You know, he wanted to check on his mother to see what had happened. And he says, as he's moving across the field, he sees these two glowing eyes that are directly in front of him. And he's like, this is unlike anything he'd experienced before because it was larger than him. And he's like, that's an ape. Like straight away, he's like, and immediately I'm thinking, this is a Bigfoot. This is a Bigfoot report. But he never actually sees the full form, right? He just sees.
How does he know it's an ape then?
He just has this instinctual feeling because this thing is at least 7 feet tall and he shoots at it. Like, of course you would. You've got this weird thing on your property. He shoots at it. As soon as he shoots at it, it just disappears. Like, it just vanishes. So he starts going back to the house because obviously he's very frightened by whatever he's just experienced. And he says, suddenly, this creature was behind him. He'd shot at it. It had vanished. But it suddenly appears right near him. Mm. Like, it somehow materializes. He doesn't say it materializes, but it seemingly is able to move vast distances very quickly. And he shoots at it. Again, like, he tries to raise his pistol. I think he gets off a couple of shots into the air. But when he points at the creature, something taps into his mind. Like, something, he says, I could hear something like it was trying to talk to me, but it wasn't making any sense. And it kept on getting closer and closer. And I wanted to pull the trigger. You know, and I understand that. Like, I wanted to pull the trigger, but it wouldn't let me. So again, they can control people. That's got.
Did he have it in his sights, and he just felt a hairy hand push the rifle down and just whisper in his ear? Yup.
No, nothing like that at all. But he says that he got inside and he was just babbling, and his mother was trying to calm him down, and like the relatives, the aunt and uncle had shown up by this point. They noticed something strange. His hands are covered in this weird green substance. Like, almost
like
luminescent green. No, it was like powder, but it wasn't powder. Like, but it was all over their hands, right? And it wouldn't rub off. It wouldn't rush off. Arlen is completely freaked out by this. He's talking a mile a minute. They took away his gun, obviously, because he's so freaked out. And then he stands up as if he's in a trance, walks to the door, and then starts trying to go outside because the creature was at the back. It was like it was summoning him. and he goes to the back door and starts having a conversation in trance.
What?
With this being.
In what language?
No one knows. No one knows what it was. But he says, I got this feeling, like obviously he reported this later on, that it wanted me to go outside. And these glowing eyes kept getting closer and closer, but I couldn't move and it was waiting for me. And while I couldn't understand it, it was making electrical sounds. I couldn't make out, yeah, couldn't make out its shape in the dark, but this is what he's going through. And he finally gets outside far enough, it touches him on the cheek. Like it touches it. And as soon as it touches him on the cheek, he says it's like touching an electrified fence. The shock goes through his entire body. He's broken out of the trance. He's like, I was so freaked out. I was torn up.
Mm.
The creature disappears. He stumbles backwards into the house, falls backwards. His face is all puffy because his face is all inflated as a result of where this thing had touched him. So it's like he's had some type of reaction to it or I don't know what's going on. But it's burning, but he has this strange...
He's allergic to him like he's allergic to cats.
Yeah, well, but he's got this strange purple mark on the right side of his face. Like it's like a bruise, but something different. And his father finally comes home and his father's like, your hands don't look like they're green. Like they actually are green. Like it was almost like the pigment of his skin had become green. This is how horrible it is. And so he's got green hands, burnt cheek, no other physical effects, but mentally and emotionally, he's completely shaken by what, you know, he's experienced. And he's like, I don't want anyone to go through this, what I went through. I haven't any idea what it was. It wasn't human form, but I have this feeling that it's going to come back. And it may not come back here, but it will come back somewhere. And the mother, Kathy, you know, she agrees. She's like, I know one thing, that I'm not going to be brave enough to follow it next time. And there's this sensation that it was trying to pull me to that light. So what are these things doing? Why are they, like, is it a trap of some kind? Like, why are they trying to bring people to it? But this whole light phenomenon has actually been reported in other cases. And there's a really well-known case, which is the Delphos case, which I won't go into in too great a detail because you're probably aware of it. But the crux of it is that back in Delphos Canvas, I think this was November of 1971. Yeah, it was November of 1971. It was around 7 p.m. when there was a 16 or 17-year-old boy by the name of Ronnie Johnson who was out tending to a flock, right? I don't know if it was sheep, cows, whatever it was, but he was out doing it. And his mother yells out from the homestead and says, hey, your dinner's ready, you know, come in. And he's like, okay, yep, I'll be there in a couple of minutes. You know, I have to finish doing what I'm doing here. And he claims that all of a sudden he sees this rumbling or he hears this rumbling in the sky and this craft appears like over the top and it's got all these multicolored lights around it. It's mushroom shaped. And this thing kind of comes down towards the ground and is hovering over the top of him. And as it's hovering over the top of him, it's illuminating the ground and causing him to have this feeling like it's this so much physical pain that comes from the light, and the light just gets brighter and brighter and brighter until the thing just finally disappears. Now, he rushes inside and tells his parents. His parents come out and have a look. And it's only 10 minutes afterwards that this incident had taken place that they grab hold of a Polaroid camera, because that's all they had available to them. And they take photographs of the ground. The reason why they took photographs of the ground is because precisely where Ronnie was standing, there's this giant glowing ring. Like it's a glowing ring that was left behind by this craft, right? So Jacques Vallée actually was involved in the investigation of this case because it is strange. Like it was glowing in the dark and that, you know, that doesn't make sense, but there could be some type of bioluminescence that's going on. You know, who knows what's causing it? Obviously fields don't just naturally glow, but we're obviously looking for a rational explanation for, you know, why that's happening. But he claims that, well, the Jacques Vallée said that when they did, you know, investigations into it, first of all, this thing was glowing brightly during the daylight. Like people during the day could see just how brightly this thing was. Nothing would grow there for a long time afterwards,
yeah,
which is a typical thing with these sorts of cases. But when they performed scientific analysis, like chemical soil analysis on this later on, they found that there was a high incidence of a microorganism in the soil that really shouldn't have been there. Like they didn't understand why this microorganism was right there. And there was a high level of oxalic acid, I think. Again, something that shouldn't be in the soil. But there was some speculation that this might have something to do with propulsion. So it was like the idea was is that if this was researched by Dr. J. Robert Mooney, he said that the high concentration of this acid in the soil might have something to do with the use of low temperature ionization, which is what the system might be using. It might be some type of carbon fuel source, which is using like an elemental carbon. And as a result, that's what's causing this acid to be in the ground as it's being projected down into the ground. But it might be something else, because what isn't told until a little bit later on, is that Ronnie's mother, upon seeing this, like it's a natural kind of thing, she leans down and she just touches it as you would, like to see what it is. Is it a powder? Is it a liquid? What is it? She touches it and first of all, it's warm. Like it's warm, everything around it's almost like it's waterproof now because later on they pour water on it and everything, the ground, the rest of the ground is moist, but this is like dry, like it's been heated, but there's no heat coming from it. And when they pour water on it, it just kind of falls off like it's waterproof. Mm. And when she touches this stuff, she says immediately her finger starts buzzing, like there's a numbness that's attached to this. And she's like, ah, ah. And so she starts like rubbing it on her clothes. So it's on her clothes, not on her skin. She rubs it on her clothes and it seeps through the clothes. And it starts causing her entire leg to become numb. There's like some type of anesthetic effect from this light, from this substance. Now, eventually this stuff did disappear. But the reason why this case stands out is because it's, you know, one of the very few cases that has such significant physical trace evidence for something like this taking place. And look, again, I know this is said quite often, but this particular kid, like 16, 17-year-old kid, you know, he's a farming kid. They're a salt of the earth family. He's not prone to making up stories. He wouldn't have any reason for it. But the investigators, and this is why, you know, we really do need to support, you know, UFO investigators and researchers that are on the ground. Because when they spoke to Ronnie and his mother and his family, they found out something quite odd. So to Ronnie, all this happened in 5 minutes. Like he heard his mother call out and he's like, yep, I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Like, let me just finish what I'm doing here. The light comes over. He sees it. He like, looks up at it. It disappears.
Right.
Goes inside and tells his parents what he sees. But his mother's like, no, that's not what happened at all. I called out to him. We went inside. We were waiting so long that he didn't come in for to have his dinner. So we just thought he was taking too long. We both sat and ate our dinner and were finished by the time that he had come inside and at least half an hour had passed.
So he's got missing time.
He's got missing time of half an hour. And the dog was freaked out. So going back to the early reports that I was telling you from, you know, Queensland and the Queensland Ufological Research, you know, Association, you know, they were just... the animals were going crazy. Like he's got this dog that previously has not been terrified by anything, but it was. It was absolutely, you know, scared of something, but whatever that is, you know, no one knows. And these sorts of cases, you know, they come up again and again and again. You've got Stephen in Minnesota in 1979. There was a policeman that was on patrol around 2 a.m. He sees a bright light coming out of the sky heading towards his patrol car and this light envelops him. Like it completely envelops him and it causes him to black out. Now he wakes up. And when he wakes up, he's outside the car. So he's got a little bit of missing time going on. He's outside the car. He's got substantial injuries, but he doesn't have injuries that are consistent with him being flung from a vehicle, right? The car's fine. Something else has happened. Well, I shouldn't say the car's fine, right? The car itself had been, the front of it had been bent and it was like the side of it had been impacted like it was made of tinfoil. But he didn't have any injuries that were consistent with a car accident. He had injuries that were consistent with some type of exposure to metal welders or something like that, like a radiation, some type of light as opposed to actual physical injury that comes from it. So these lights, you know, and this kind of physical impact for these things comes up again and again. Then you've got September, a farmer, George Blackwell, 1980. He's on a farm in Australia. He's working in the early hours, you know, of the morning. Animals again reacting very badly. He looks outside, obviously, to check on what's going on with the animals. Guess what the animals, well, guess what happens? He sees this craft just hovering around his field. He's like, what the hell is that? He rushes outside and it takes off, right? It leaves a black ring. Like there's this strange black ring that's in the ground. And he's like, oh, that's so strange. None of the animals for weeks would go near this ring that was left in the ground. But the kicker is when he goes to check his irrigation, his 40,000 liter tank, like water tank, drained.
Yeah, totally the old drained. Water thieves.
The whole water thieves. You know, there's no damage to the tank. There's no reason for it. And 40,000 litres is a huge amount of water.
This is the kind of thing that the Alien Hate League will compensate you for.
Absolutely, we will.
Through litigation against these extraterrestrial menaces.
We will have extraterrestrial water tariffs. We're going to stop all of this. Like this is, and that's actually funny enough because I found in Flying Saucer Review there were a multitude of those sorts of cases. But one that I will just mention, I'll talk about a couple of these things in the Plus extension coming up in a moment. But there's this odd case that I found, right, that came from Caloundra in Queensland. Guess where Caloundra is? about another 45 minutes away from us, Ben. I mean, not too far at all. And it relates
maybe to- if you drive. If I drive, it's 20 minutes.
Well, it depends, okay? It depends on where you're going. But it's not too far. I mean, you can actually see it from here. You can see it if you go up on the hill in Maroochydore, you can see this place. So it's not far. But it's on the outskirts of Caloundra. It happened in the late 1980s. The exact date hasn't been provided. But it relates to Harry Roy from Roy Farms, 73 years old, and apparently a late contactee. And this was reported to John Pinkney. Now, Pinkney is, he's written all those great books on Australian phenomena. Mm. But this one particular story related to an incident that happened to Roy, and Roy was unable to explain it. So Roy claims that one day he was working the fields on his farm, and it's a pineapple farm, right? And he says they hear this series of loud, huge thumps. And I think it's an earthquake. We don't have earthquakes here. So I don't know why they were thinking it's an earthquake, but that's just where their mind went. And he's like, oh, that's kind of strange. So Harry Roy decides to go over to his brother Gordon's place to check to make sure that his brother's okay. Now, they had left 15,000 pineapples in this field, right? This is the field that they were tilling. He goes and checks on his brother. And his brother's like, what the hell are you talking about? I hadn't heard any sound. Like, there's nothing. There's no helicopters, anything else. So they go back, right? 15,000 pineapples had disappeared, vanished. Now, this isn't like someone could come along easily with a truck and pick up 15,000 pineapples. There'd been lights in the sky. So there's no direct connection, but the idea is here is that something had taken the pineapples that was non-human. There was some, and guess what else happens? His dam was drained. Completely drained.
It took all the water and took all his pineapples.
All the water, took all of his pineapples, and this had happened on several occasions. So this guy is being harassed by some type of phantom menace.
His wife was missing too.
Well, no, that wasn't reported at all.
He's got a couple more. He's a polygamist.
These things, so we talk about, you know, going full circle back to the start of the show there, where I was saying, look, you know, we have to address the consciousness elements, the high strangeness of this stuff. We sure do. But the reality is there's still very much a nuts and bolts element of the UFO phenomenon. Very much so. And it seems to come in waves. And it seems like that's occurring once again. You've got an uptick in sightings. You've got weird activity going on. You know, what that woman in Birrabarram saw was very much physical. Like it appeared because it was scraping along the ground. Like if this is hallucinations, if this is some type of projection, I don't think it would be that visceral that you would hear the metal of this, the lid of this cylinder.
She obviously saw something. Yeah, we need to talk to her to get to the bottom.
And look at her age, and she's like, I've never had an encounter before. Mm. So there's something very, very odd that's occurring once again, and we will be digging deeper into this in the future. But in our Plus extension, I just want to go into a couple more of these cases of, you know, weird thefts by UFOs, and also have a look at some of the strange elements of stories that come out of the Glasshouse Mountains.
I also have thefts coming up in the Plus extension, the theft of a young man's innocence.
I was going to say cherry theft, but that works.
Mm? Coming up in Plus, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today.
This is
get
revolting.
Access to your favorite extension. Every single week we do a massive
Why did you raise your eyebrows a bit when you said extension?
I just realized none of these gags work on just audio. It's all this wasted material because we're not going to release this video.
No, it's never going to be released.
Yeah, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. Get access to your extensions on your favorite show. Of course, we do at least another hour in our extensions every single Friday. And of course, if you sign up for Plus, you get access to an entirely exclusive season just for Plus members that comes out every single Tuesday. You're getting more than double the content if you sign up for Plus. You also get access to our higher bitrate feed for the show, so a better sounding show. Totally ad-free version of the show for our Plus members. And if you sign up for MU Max, you get access to our massive, massive back catalogue as well. That's a wrap for this free edition of the show. Tons of great stuff coming up in Plus. We're going to go into the awesome La Grana Humana by Salvador Fresedo. We're going to talk about his family member who has been encountering these strange individuals who appear human but are clearly something else. I've also got some weird reports from Peru. Amazing stuff coming up. Again, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. That's a wrap for this free edition of the show. Thanks for listening. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week. Welcome back to your Plus extension. Great to have you with us. Well, I really